Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, bonjour. In Spain, hola. In Italy, ciao. In Egypt, ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, akwaba. In Nigeria, peleo. In South Africa, sawubona. In Senegal, nangadef. In Kenya, jambo. In Israel, shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all.
Tune in to Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green on Thursdays at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear great topics and stories on grief and turn you into victory. Join Dr. Debbie Green to listen to stories of triumph and learn how to overcome. You are not alone in your life, and there is hope in the darkest hour. This is your time to learn strategies and solutions to improve your life. It's your time. So join Dr. Debbie Green with Soulful Solutions and call in on Thursday at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time at 515-605-9325 with comments and questions. Look to hear from you real soon.
Grand Rising, and thank you all for joining us on this Thursday edition of the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. I'm Naima Latif, and we'll be joined by our host, Dr. Debbie Green, to talk to you about mental illness. Mental illness is a very sensitive subject and is often misunderstood, but more importantly, not respected as an illness. What is important is that when we recognize it, that we don't punish people for being mentally ill. Unfortunately, this is what our society tends to do, and that is punish those who are suffering from mental illness rather than giving them the compassion that they need. And we want you to join this conversation. You may have someone who has some level of mental illness in your family. Often it happens during the elder years with Alzheimer's, dementia, and other degenerative diseases that affect the mind, but sometimes it happens as a result of severe trauma, post-traumatic stress disorder,
which is not just a wartime manifestation, but many of those who are living daily lives are also suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. And there are many manifestations of mental illness, but we have to take the stigma out of it and treat it as it is, an illness, and give people the compassion and the help that they need. So if you want a visual connection with us, then go to Facebook and go to Soulful Solutions, and you will see the beautiful face of Dr. Debbie Green.
Good morning, good morning, good morning.
Yes.
Wherever you may be, it is a sunny day here in Atlanta. So the sun is up high, and I hope it's warm today. Hello, Naima. How you doing this morning?
Fantastic. How are you?
I am well. I am well. Just coming back, settling back in from a trip from Mississippi.
Ooh, Mississippi.
It was a grand old time, as one would say. It was really great to be out there in the community to spread some wellness, you know, of all types. So, yes, it's much needed. It's much needed. So this topic right now, it kind of hits home with me because this is my population. This is something, this is a subject matter that I speak about all day, every day. And I hear the cries of individuals that they have experienced this and have been diagnosed with a certain mental illness, and you hear this all the time. They just don't understand. They don't understand what I feel. They don't understand what I'm going through. I have no support in my family. I have no support anywhere. The only support I have is when I come into a mental health hospital where I can sit next to somebody that actually understands what I'm going through. And I ask those individuals when they say that, and I mean, I comply with them, but also what they call empathize. You know, I don't sympathize, I empathize with them, because I always imagine myself, if I had a diagnosis with mental illness, how would I want the world to view me? You know, how, you know, what would I want to relay to the world to let them know, no, it's just not something that I can control, but at the same token, I don't want you to look down on me as though that something's wrong with me, you know.
Yeah.
So that's a real thin line between that is prejudgmental as well as stereotypical people. When we do that, we stereotype individuals. And we see this all the time. We see mental illness is up close and personal. It could be as the person that's homeless on the street that's sitting there talking to themselves.
Yeah.
And you wonder, you know, what's wrong with that man, you know? And he can't really tell you exactly what's wrong with him, but all he knows is that there's something going on in my mind that I can't explain. And that's how I kind of help individuals and educate people on mental illness is something that's going on in the mind that is not always explainable.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, when you look at mental illness, you know, an illness of the mind, it's the same as illness in the body, but it's not given the same empathy or compassion. I mean, you wouldn't treat somebody badly if they were sitting there with a broken leg, or if they were you know, losing an exorbitant amount of weight because they had cancer in the body. You would not treat them badly for that. You wouldn't talk to them badly or arrest them and throw them in jail if they had a physical illness. But this is what happens to people with mental illness. They get imprisoned. They get spoken to harshly and cruelly. They get neglected and allowed to suffer out in the cold. And so when we close mental hospitals, what is that saying? You wouldn't close a hospital where you had heart patients hooked up to respirators, or you wouldn't close a hospital where people needed surgery to save their lives. You wouldn't close a hospital where people have broken bones and need casts and healing. So when you close a mental hospital, and there have been mental hospitals closed all over the nation,
right,
and put people out in the street, what does that say about our society and our lack of understanding and compassion for mental illness? It needs
exactly.
treatment just like every other illness. So as you said, you see people out in the street, and they're struggling with not being able to figure out what's happening with their mind that they don't understand and they can't control, and they get treated badly. What does that do? Just make the mental illness worse. Now you've got the distress of the survival issue. You know, you could be forced to freeze to death because you're mentally ill, and no one will help you, and you're out in the cold sleeping on the concrete.
This is the sensitivity that I mostly battle with, Naima, because my field of understanding what mental illness is and what it is not and how society actually views mental illness, because we all have a time where we become depressed.
Mm.
We all have a time where we become guilt-ridden or going through some type of ongoing, you know, hurt or pain. And because of our ability, some of us can, like they said, we use the word snap out of it. But to be honest with you, it is always something that lingers in the back of the mind.
Right.
You know, yes, I got over this. Yes, I went through this. But how if you didn't go through it?
Right.
How if you didn't, you know, snap out of it? You know, and, you know, we actually thank our divine connection, which is God, for keeping us resilient. But some of us that walk this earth are not as strong as others. So I want to break down the labeling, but I also want people to understand what a diagnosis is before it even is given to a person with mental illness. Because there is a difference. There is a difference of the understanding, but also the acceptance of what it is to be mentally ill. Mentally ill, it goes across so many barriers. You know, we have a doctor for every part of our being. Every part, I don't care what it is, there's a doctor for it. So guess what? There's a doctor for the mind.
Right.
It's called a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
That's a doctor for the mind. That's all he does all day long. He or she sits there and writes medication for the brain. That's their job. Okay?
Right.
And so you got the psychologist is the person that helps one to figure out what the issues are. And then you have the therapist, like myself, that get to the root cause. We get to the root cause of how a person has lost their way in life due to some kind of circumstance, situation, repercussions of an ongoing battle of things that's not finalized, right? Okay, so that being said, mental illness is not a diagnosis when we feel some type of way momentarily. When I say momentarily, like if you're having a bad day and that bad day just kind of I call it an adjustment day, because no day is bad. Any day that God has given you is a good day, okay?
Yes.
Because you are still here and present.
Yes.
So it's
still
an
reading.
Adjustment day. So if something comes up, you know, you may think, oh, my goodness, either if you're feeling in your body, you feel it in your mind, I'm just not feeling that wonderful that day. So, all right, so if it's a mental fog, sometimes people wake up in mental fog, like it's like confusion, you know, in the ADLs. ADLs means activities of daily living. If you wake up with that mental fog, like, every day for a consistency of 14 days, feeling like you can't get out of bed, feeling that, what do you call those emotional roller coasters of hopelessness and things of that nature. Okay, so what has happened is you've been impacted by life so much to it has caused you to deteriorate, okay? Addiction is also a part of mental illness. And it is. It's like because that person has been a what they call assumptions, but most of all, they've been actually habitually doing something to help soothe whatever is going on inside. At least they think so. They've been coping by using some other method other than medication. So what they use drugs. So in other words, all of these things that I'm saying and more, when it is a ongoing habit of more than 14 days, then there's an issue of consistency. When it's constantly going on over and over again and you find yourself burrowing into an area where you're losing your self-identity, then that's what happens, and then that's where the diagnosis then comes in. But I want those who understand that's listening that may have a diagnosis with depression, anxiety, bipolar, schizophrenia, or wherever you find yourself, you are not that diagnosis. That is something that has been in your life for whatever period of time, but you can't wear it as you wear your eyes or attached to the arms of your body. You have to know that it is something I'm dealing with. It is something that I'm experiencing. It is not what I am, and it's not who I am.
That's an important thing to understand, because just like in our Tuesday host, Jody talks about how she was misdiagnosed with a lot of physical illnesses,
yes,
put on all these medications. You can be misdiagnosed with a mental illness and given treatment that really, as you said about therapy, doesn't get to the root of the problem, which if you could uncover maybe why you've taken a downturn mentally, you can heal from the inner hurt. And
right,
because we're a whole mind-body-spirit complex, the mental distress can affect parts of your body.
Correct.
And so we're just now learning that you have to look at the whole person and see how all the parts interconnect, because you could be having a physical illness that's actually reflecting an emotional distress that's creating a mental disorder. But if you dealt with the root cause of it, you could fix the whole thing. I mean, I just realized a pattern in my own mood swings. April 1st is my wedding anniversary.
Okay.
And I realized that I go through a bit of a depression during that time. But then April 15th is my birthday. So
mm-hmm.
It's like between the 1st and the 15th, I have mood swings because I'm kind of looking forward to the birthday, but I'm also going through the sadness of still, you know, even after almost 15 years, you know, grief of my husband's passing. And then he passed in October, and I realized there's a pattern of sadness in October that
mm-hmm.
I go through. And so because that was kind of a high-stress time, you know, as he was transitioning. So realizing the patterns of that, I know if I'm low energy or if I've got a lot of pains in my body or, you know, I'm not able to focus, I'm understanding that it's triggered by memories and still a bit of grief that I'm holding in my body and might manifest in different ways. And so I might even respond to people differently or be a little more forgetful or even a little more clumsy, just all these things of just being a little bit off because of the energy from the grief.
Ooh.
So, and knowing that, at least I can understand what's happening if my behavior is a little off. Sometimes people don't realize, oh, that's what it is. That's at the root of whatever is affecting me and making me not myself, or maybe make bad decisions during that time, or whatever the case may be. If you don't take time to analyze what is underneath, then you could easily, you know, misdiagnosed, okay, I'm getting stomach pains. Well, let me take some medication. Well, maybe the stomach pain is the anxiety from the memory of the grief. If I understand that, then I don't medicate the body when really the issue is the mind remembering and regenerating emotions that were stressful.
Exactly,
exactly.
And with all illness.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very critical point you just made, because people usually misdiagnose what they feel inside by some type of medical situation, and really it's truly grief of some sort, some situations of life impaction that's causing their body to feel the way, because like I said, we're tripod beings, you know, and we have to allow ourselves to feel this thing called life, because a lot of times we try to put the poker face on. We don't want to relate what we feel to other people. A lot of times we just hold things in and not knowing that, hey, yeah, you need to talk about this. You know, this is really affecting you. And if you don't talk about it, then what you're doing, you're suppressing that moment. And like you said, when you go through, the body already keeps the score.
Yeah.
The body keeps the score because every part of us, we're 70% water. Water has memory. So every cellular part of us holds a memory of disappointment, holds a memory of happiness. Whatever it is, it still holds the memory of it. And I think miseducation when it comes to the body, the physical body, you know what I'm saying, how it actually responds to trauma. You see what I'm saying? Trauma is anything that disappoints us to the point where we get a little setback, you know.
Yeah.
We get setback mentally, emotionally, you know, any of those things. And then, you know, we continue to, you know, press forward. Like I said, we're resilient. So we continue to move forward and move forward and move forward. But even in our moving forward, there's still an area in us that reminds us, remember when?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Remember when? I think Carolyn, good morning, she made a great point for our Facebook watchers. She says, identify the triggers during certain times is very necessary.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It is. Because when you don't identify what you're going through, you are ignoring it.
Yeah.
And if you ignore it, just trust and believe, it will come back up and let you know it's there. You know, that's what we call cycling. You know, cycling is the same things that happen more than one time, but it wants you to acknowledge, okay, I feel you. I feel that moment when I went through this and I went through that. Just acknowledging it, like you said, that's what it wants, because the body communicates with us. The physical body communicates as well as with the spirit man. All of them communicate, but again, if you don't know your being, if you're not familiar with your being, and if you're not listening to it, then you are causing it to, and it'll get inflamed. Think about the word of inflammation. Mm-hmm. Inflamed. Mm-hmm. And we think about inflamed. That means to burn.
Flame.
Okay?
Man. Yes.
That means to burn. So inflammation of the body, something's burning, something is not in its ordinary healthy fashion that it was created for. So, and we know the inflammation of any part of our body causes a problem. It doesn't matter what it is. You can have a cut that's inflamed, that has inflammation, and it's going to be an issue. So just imagine that you could be inflamed in your emotions. A lot of people don't believe that, but you can. You can be, you know, inflaming your emotions where you have raw emotions. You're very hypersensitive and overly feel everything. It doesn't matter what it is, which then causes excessive stress upon your mind. Yeah. So these are areas of you know, what we call emotional illnesses. But the goal is to know that, listen to your being, right, and not allow anything to overtake you to the point where, you know, you don't understand what's going on. Because anytime you have to draw a question, you're in, what's happening to me? Okay, that means you got to take a little closer look, you know.
Yeah. You know, I'm sorry. You were saying?
No, I was just saying, take a closer look and take your time doing it.
Yes. You know, you mentioned strength and people being, some people being able to overcome things and others not. And I remember, and we might even say this on the show here, people who go through post-traumatic stress disorder and war, and the difference between those who go through war and come out of it and are able to recover, and those who don't and are traumatized and can't get beyond the mental illness of that. And they, in doing the study of those two groups, they discovered those who had happy childhoods and good memories that they could go back to, they were able to recover from the trauma of war. Those who did not, those who had maybe stressful childhoods, trauma in their childhoods, they were not able to go back and reset. Like, you know, if you have a computer that malfunctions, you can kind of reset it back to the origin where it was functional. But if you don't have that origin, if you don't have that memory that of happiness that you can go back and recall and reset your mind back to the time when you felt at peace and you felt joy and you felt safe, then if you don't have that because your childhood was not one where you felt joy and you felt safe and you felt at peace, then you have nowhere to go when you're traumatized other than to stay in that state of trauma. So strength is built in the beginning, in childhood, in the foundation of your life. And this is why how we are parented is so critical. We have to have good, happy memories during that time of childhood to go back to when we go through those stressors in life. You have to have something, you have to have a foundation you can return to reset your mind, your heart, your spirit to that feeling of peace and joy and love. You have to have something that you can recall in order for you to reset the feeling that you're having when you go through that extreme stress. So this is where the strength comes from. It comes from having that foundation, and it's very difficult to create in your adulthood if you have not felt what it feels like to be at peace and to feel safe in your childhood.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it takes a lot of concentration, some work as well, because it's not, you know, absolutely not humanly possible to create the peace. It's just that you got to love yourself. You know, one thing about also having any diagnosis with mental illness, you really have to use a lot of self-care. Mm-hmm. You also have to have self-compassion because of the things that's going on in your mind. And the thing, you know, mind sickness is not the same as any other sickness. It is like, because it literally, if you're not careful what it does, it will control you and lead you in a whole other direction, you know, because you got to think, this is our thinking center. You know what I'm saying? We don't think with no other part in our body. We feel with our heart, but when your thoughts are racing, when your thoughts are uncontrollable, that's a very difficult thing. One of my patients told me a while back, it's like, he said, no one understands how it feels to have a state of madness in their mind.
Wow.
A state of madness where you hear chatter, 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 chatter all the time and you don't have any type of peace.
Wow.
It's like an ongoing television that you can't turn off.
Wow.
All you hear is just chatter, chatter, chatter. So this is like a diagnosis of what they call psychosis.
Mm.
And so it has the ego then splits up in so many different compartmentalized type of sections. And, you know, this is also a diagnosis symptom of schizophrenia.
So where do the voices come from? Are they memories that the person has had? Are they things being replayed in their mind? Where does the chatter come from?
It comes from so many different angles. It could come from childhood trauma. It could come from thoughts of delusion and paranoia. Delusions is like fragmentations of thinking that, for example, one of my patients said that there were everywhere he goes, there are people watching him.
Mm.
You know, they're watching him through the walls. They're watching him through, you know, the cameras in the stores.
I got a friend
that's
watching
him. Yeah, I mean,
wow.
it's paranoia.
I mean,
and
the person's harmless, very, you know, very calm, peaceful demeanor, but this person came to do some work at our home, and every device, this person was saying that, oh, this is a camera, people are watching me. And I realized that there was something a little off there. But, you know, I also realized they manage it, but that's what their reality is. They are believing that every device is something that they're being watched. And he was like, you know, the government, they watch you do these things. And I'm listening patiently, and I'm thinking,
I know it's
so
not
that,
understandable,
that's got to be,
but that's what,
you know, difficult to live with that feeling all the time. That you know, well, we got to cover this up, you know, cover up the heating vent or cover up, you know, they're watching. Wow, okay.
One of our Facebook lives, I believe this is Queen Zelda. Grand Rising, beautiful Queen teachers, thank you for making this distinction. So many people in the world are under attack from their own minds. You're absolutely correct.
Yes,
that is absolutely correct.
Right. Yeah, we got to take a break, but when we come back, I have a question about recognizing mental illness when it perhaps has been misdiagnosed as criminal intention, or even being able to recognize when mental illness could evolve into criminal behavior. How do we know the difference, or can we even tell? But we'll be right back after this quick break. And if you're on our switchboard now and have a question, press 1. If you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325. If you want to join with us on Facebook Live, go to Facebook on Soulful Solutions. That's S-O-U-L-F-U-L, Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. You will see her beautiful face and my big smile. And we'll be right back after this break, so stay with us.
Hi, I'm Jody Susan with Susan Essentials. I started Susan Essentials in 2015 because of a personal health journey. I was over-medicated and put on 19 different medications. And yes, I reversed all my chronic diseases using plant and energy-based healing. It was amazing. At Susan Essentials, we support both consumers and businesses, and we do that with helping your employees or yourself with a food as medicine mindset. How Susan Essentials supports businesses and consumers is we teach people about a food as medicine mindset. So we support people on how to support their own immune system, how to support their brain health, how to support their emotional well-being. And we do that all with plant and an energy-based healing.
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the Earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
Rather than having them behind bars with other people who are not mentally ill, there are many people who are, in fact, serving time for crimes committed, but they were mentally ill at the time and really needed to be in a mental health facility as opposed to in a prison. And there are those who are in prison who say one of the most distressing, frightening things is that there are so many mentally ill people in there. So you have people who will erupt out of nowhere, and they are not in their right minds, but what they're receiving is punishment for the actions that they committed and no treatment for the mental illness. So even if they get out after a certain number of years, they're still mentally ill. And I'm wondering, is there a way we can be more observant and recognizing when someone might be in, you know, various state of illness, but that was the motivation for the crime, or that was the state of mind of the crime? And, you know, not to make the victim feel like, oh, well, you know, he's not responsible, he's mentally ill, or she was mentally ill, so just forget it. No, but helping us to have compassion for those who can't turn off the voices, who are being triggered by some internal motivation, that are acting because they're out of their minds. You know, can we really work toward healing the mentally ill, even if they've committed a crime, understanding that they were ill and handling it differently, you know, as opposed to anger and punishment, compassion for an ill person who needs help? How can we do that in our society so that we can have more understanding of people who do harm people, but they're mentally ill and they really need healing of the mind, not punishment of the body?
Right. Well, in our society today, just from my understanding, is that let's just take just one of many things, such as murder-suicide. And murder-suicide clearly is something that's not just going to happen right there in that moment. This is something that has been brewing deep down inside some person that chose at that point to make a decision to take someone's life and even their own. So, you know, we could say to society, because I'm sure the police was called more than one time, if defects or some kind of Department of Children Welfare might have gotten involved, or somebody noticed on the job that person was being abused, or something of that nature, you know, before all of this happened. So, you know, we as a society really don't take the precautionary steps, you know, to help soothe anything. It's always to the point where it's gotten to a certain heightened degree of where they call death before anyone even does anything about it. And then they still don't do anything. One of the situations are kind of what I was really focusing on, I couldn't wrap my mind around it, is when a 26-year-old male, for the sake of understanding, I'm not going to really say names, anything of that nature, but a 26-year-old black male killed his baby's mother. And the mother just had the baby 2 days ago. So the baby was with the mother when he found her. He found her, killed her, took the baby, and then threw it in a river.
Oh, my.
So you ask yourself, what was going on in this young man's mind?
Wow.
We can label a lot of different things. But one thing I know for sure, that mental illness was very alive and well.
Right.
Something was seriously, seriously wrong when he then took the life of something so innocent, but either something that belonged to him, that he became emotionless right there in that moment in time. Now, since that time, the young man has gotten apprehended by the authorities, and I'm sure they probably did some kind of psychological testing on him and then shoved him right into the system. That's what
right.
they do.
Well, that's the thing. People will read about and hear about a crime like that and become so angry. Oh, we need to make him suffer for that. Well, he's already suffering. That's why he committed that act. He's suffering on the inside. And like you say, you know, okay, they analyze whatever and then get into the system and whatever the case may be, but will he be healed? And how do we deal with, now you've got the emotional trauma of everybody connected with the families of both of them. Everybody's traumatized.
Correct.
And this is what happens with crime. You have the person who is suffering on the inside and is traumatized, and they commit some horrible act, and then all of the people connected, all of their friends, loved ones, everybody is traumatized. So some people may never recover from the act of one person. And this is why I'm hoping that we can change the way we handle people who are behaving in a way that shows they are not mentally well, instead of punishing it. And like you say, you see the patterns. You get the signs. It's not like it just all of a sudden one day you just wake up and kill your whole family. Some things have been happening. And I know there are some attempts to be preemptive. Now, I have a person who's got a situation, and they've called in on our show several times. We've even had them come on the show and talk about it. We've even had them come on with our lawyer, Wendy, during her and have her give them some advice. And I guess their situation is one in which the system was trying to protect the children, but things just went horribly wrong. This is a man who he and his wife were going through some difficult times financially. He was under a lot of stress. I guess he picked up a gun or something and said he was going to kill everybody in the house and kill himself. Well, one of the children, I guess, told a teacher about that. And, you know, the children were round up. The ones who were in school, they were taken away. The Department of Children and Family Services took them away. Then police came to his house, took the rest of his children away, and they all ended up being placed in foster homes. And over a 16-year period, he was not able to get his children back. I guess he and his wife were still struggling with their financial distress. And it just so happened that his children were placed in various foster homes where they were abused. So they ended up with a lot of emotional trauma, a lot of physical illnesses. And he's upset. He wants to sue the state. He wants to sue DCFS. And his name is Jerry Nicholas. You know, he's been fighting this case for a long time. And at first, you know, when he was saying all these things that happened, at first we didn't understand, you know, how is the system doing all these horrible things to your family? But then our lawyer, our attorney, Wendy, as she questioned him, she's able to discover that in a moment of distress, he said something.
Yes.
And that one statement, that changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because the attempt was to protect his family, not knowing to what level his distress was. Was it a momentary bad mood? Was it, you know, something that would have passed, you know, in the next couple of hours he would have calmed down? People don't know, because things do happen. And the reason why I say his name is because he's been on the show several times, so it's public knowledge at this point. But I know he's still struggling with the trauma of what happened in the aftermath, and his children are still struggling with the trauma of what happened to them. They're now adults and dealing with various levels of trauma. So I think his story is one that helps us to see that we have to make sure that if we're going to help, what we're doing to help isn't creating more harm, because you also have many people who are foster families. For them, it's a paycheck. They don't have necessarily parenting skills or skills to help traumatize children or any of that. They're just getting paid. And
right.
And they got various things inside of them that people don't realize. So we have all of these things happening, and it just creates multiple generational trauma. So how do we make sure that we are preemptive when someone is behaving erratically due to maybe whether it's alcohol, drugs, or stress? How do we protect children without harming them? How do we counsel families and try to keep families together if that is what's desirable? Or how do we help a person who has maybe gotten to the end of their rope and needs some time away to heal their mind and body before they can be safe? You know, how can we help and not hurt in these situations where there is suspected mental illness or just, you know, possible emotional distress that could evolve into mental illness and a harmful act?
Well, again, this is sounds like a situation to me where this father really got so overwhelmed to the point where he became impulsive, because that's an impulsive thought. When it comes out of your mouth like that, that's an impulsive thought. However it was created, that's one thing, but that's an impulsive thought, and that's scary. That's scary for any child to hear, whether you didn't mean it or did mean it. So quite naturally, it kind of spiraled out of control, because that's what impulsivity does. When you speak it, it has life. Those words begin to take flight, and that's what they did. They went all the way to the school. The school then took precautionary measures to make sure that those children were safe. Now you find your child in the hands of somebody you do not know. You know what I'm saying? And there it is. The children can be abused because, you know, you don't know who has a mental illness.
Right.
You don't know who is safe, and you don't know who. Because, like I said, it's not like it's a stamp on our forehead.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I'm suffering from this. I'm suffering from that. You don't know. You know, deep down inside, you don't know it until it happens. We don't have in our systematic society today a safe haven for things. It's always things built on extremes.
Right.
I mean, it sounds like that family needed respite. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
That family needed respite, which means that it needed resources. It needed the family, the mother and father need time away from the children so that they can sit down and come up with a plan, you know what I'm saying, to, okay, what's next? There was not a plan in place. They're just weighing it. And weighing it is not going to give you the answer. You see what I'm saying? You have to have a plan. They had no one to direct them. So that's why it became impulsive. You see what I'm saying? And that in all instances, more families like that than we could possibly imagine, that, you know, we don't have state, county, government resources that take it seriously enough to say, oh, wow, this family's in trouble. How do we know the family's in trouble? Well, we talk to the children, what's happening in the home. You know, say some children say things and some children don't. Yeah. Some are told not to. You
right.
know what I'm saying?
Well, nowadays, because the state can take your children, a lot of times children are told, you know, if you say something, they'll take you away. And, you know, so they're frightened into silence. And then we punish people for not having financial resources. We punish them for that. We don't help them, we punish them. So how sick is our society? You have families where maybe the children don't get food to eat, and the only food they might get is at school. And so we know during COVID, when there were children who weren't going to school, they weren't eating because the family didn't have the money. And so that is a high level of stress. And I was at a press conference yesterday at the Callahan Funeral Home, where they've had an upsurge of funerals because there's been a lot of youth committing violence acts, because there are a lot of youth that are homeless, because there are a lot of families that are in distress. So people are upset and fearful and not seeing how all the dots connect when you have families in various levels of distress. Some people kicking their teenagers out of the house
right.
because they can't deal with them. And
yes.
so you have young people in survival mode, stealing, robbing, trying to eat. And then the behavior is criminalized, as opposed to seeing that it is an outgrowth of a society that is absent in its compassion for people who need
right.
financial help and emotional support. And so we're seeing the effects. And now the behavior of many youth, it appears like mental illness. And
yeah.
it's being treated as criminal intentional behavior, and it's being punished, but the situation that created it is not being changed. So I look at the way our society responds to behavior that is totally out of order and totally destructive, and the first step is always punish. Let's punish, punish, and not look at all the connecting factors that create that moment where that person makes a decision to do something harmful to someone else.
Right. And that's because of lack of understanding. Lack of understanding, lack of education. We are a society of just giving pressure and stress. We don't look for the underlying factors of why our child is angry or why our child is acting out or any, you know, it's like we just look at it, oh, that child's a bad child. We label. That's what this whole show is about, is labeling. You'll label something. And, you know, you can't judge the book by its cover. You see what I'm saying? So the goal is to, you know, for every viewer, every listener, to look at this from a perspective. When you see something, don't just prejudge it, no matter what it is. I don't care if it's family members. I don't care if it's friends or whatever it is. Look for the underlining factors. There's some underlining factors on why this person is always angry, why this person is always sad, why this person seems to be confused, or whatever the case may be. These are only reactions of habitual responses that you see due to something that's not settled deep down inside that person's being. And that's what mental illness is. We were not born mentally ill. No one was.
No,
I don't care if your mother, your sister, your brother, you know, might have had diagnosis or whatever it is, you know, years ago before there was even a psychological evaluation. There was this thing called nervous breakdown, senility, senile. You've heard that before, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Where grandmama, whoever, she just senile because she's, you know, the way she's talking to you, the way she's acting out, or whatever the case may be.
Going back in her mind to relive
exactly.
a time that is past, you know, all
and that's
of that.
And that's due from trauma. When a person experiences disappointment to the highest levels, The mind is trying to make sense of it. The heart is the one holding the issue. Mm. And the thing about it is it's trying to communicate with the mind, I want to be settled. I'm ready to move on. But because of the fear base on the mind, it keeps the mind from not responding to this heart issue. And when the heart does not respond, then that's when major, major disruption, fragmentation then starts. And that person slowly loses itself. I don't know if anybody is familiar with Dr. Alzheimer's. Okay, but before there was Alzheimer's disease or Alzheimer's dementia, there was a doctor by the name of Dr. Alzheimer. That's where it came from. Mm-hmm. His first patient was called Lois. That was her first name. And Lois will always say, I just feel like I'm losing myself. I don't know who I am anymore. And so he started, first he thought it was a person that was just, you know, going through the emotions because he was taking her at face value. And then when he started studying her and realizing, and back then, you know, in the early 1900s, they didn't have x-rays. They didn't have those things that we have now. Mm-hmm. So he had to sit down with her every day and listen to her actions, listen to her words, look at her habitual responses and reactions. And what he figured out was she was literally losing herself. Mm. She was having what they call a nervous breakdown.
Wow.
Which is now known as psychosis today.
Mm. That's what are the symptoms?
They gave it a name. They called it psychosis.
Mm.
So you are mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually discombobulated.
Mm.
That's what nervous breakdown is. And I'm sure somebody who's listening, parents might have, or someone older back in the day might have went through something like that. Yeah, I remember when so-and-so had a nervous breakdown.
Can't function, can't think. Clearly,
no, you're out of control. You can't function. You can't sleep. You can barely eat. You just, you know, you get to a point where you lose yourself.
Mm.
That's what you do. You lose yourself in the midst of what you're going through in your mind.
Mm.
Not
wow.
just in your heart, but in your mind.
In your mind.
And the mind gets totally, again, discombobulated because it's no other word, fragmented, confused, conflicted, whatever word you want to use, but it's to a point where you can't, what they call the executive mind, the rationale, the reasoning, the logic cannot give you an answer.
Mm.
You don't know how to find an answer, so you're in this tunnel. I compare it to being in a tunnel. You know what I'm saying? Like a tunnel where there's no outside answers. Nothing is coming in. Even if it's there, you can't see the light at the end.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? All you know is that you're screaming from the inside out and no one hears you.
Wow, that's a horrible feeling. You know, and I look at people.
It's madness. That's what it's called. It's madness.
Yeah. So when people commit suicide, and I've heard a very wise person say that, suicide is when you destroy the body, but it's the mind that's the problem.
Correct.
So, you know, people, and we've had the, you know, former beauty pageant winner commit suicide, jump out of a window.
Chelsea, Chris.
Yes, and so many others who commit suicide, and you might look at them, I can think of various entertainers, and you think, but, and even comedians, you know.
There's no respect to a person. You don't have to have enough money or no money. It's what suicide is.
Yeah.
You really know what suicide is. It's the ideation. It's either going to be attempt or a committal.
Yeah. And for whatever was happening inside of their mind, they were not able, like you say, you're screaming and no one hears you. You can't get any information in that will help soothe what your mind is telling you. And the only way to stop the pain, you believe, is to just end the life. So you end the body's capacity to hold your life force energy when really the problem was what was happening in your mind. And if you could have healed that, then you would not have destroyed the body.
So since you brought up that topic, let's look at that just a little bit closer, okay? You are at that point of a decision. Because remember, suicide is not something that just happens. It's been there many times. It goes and comes. It goes and comes. And that person doesn't, like, in their mind, this is their virtual reality. Okay? It's a virtual reality. It's not a reality that's based on reality itself.
It's the reality in their mind.
It's the reality in their mind. A person that has suicidal ideation, homicidal ideation, or both, because you can hold both, it is a reality that's in the mind. That means that they have a total blockage of what's their real reality.
Right, right.
Okay? So, that being said, now that person then is what they call raw nerves. Raw nerves. Very, very impulsive, and therefore, and they think in their mind that they're in such an extreme, painful situation that they have no other choice to make a selfish, independent choice to not think about nothing else, because it's spiritual and it's also mental.
Right.
Right there in that moment.
And either they do it with the thought that this is going to hurt the people who hurt me, or they do it with the thought of, I don't care who I'm hurting, I'm just in so much pain, I need to leave. But either way, they're not seeing the long-range consequences.
It's not rational.
It's not rational.
There's no rational. That's why I have to help you get it right here, and anybody's listening. There's no rational, there's no reasonable, no logical explanation. Right there. None of that. Because if it was, they would not do it.
Right.
So,
we got a call on the line, but I need to take a break, and then we'll be right back in area code 773-263. We're coming
y'all
to you
don't
next.
Don't miss this, because I got a point when I come back.
Oh, yeah.
Don't miss
this point. We'll be right back after this quick break, so stay with us.
Have you ever dreamed of going to exotic places, meeting fascinating people, enjoying uplifting music, and spending nights in a luxurious hotel? Do you look forward to a relaxing vacation where you can walk along the beach or sit in a quiet park and enjoy the sunset or sunrise? Whether you're flying around the world or driving across the country, we will share travel tips that will help you stay safe while you enjoy the journey. Join me every third Saturday of the month, 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, and move around with Deborah here on the Female Solutions Show. Call in and comment 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak.
Hey, it's time to take charge of your health. I'm Viata, your holistic life coach, and every Friday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, I'm here on The Female Solution to empower you to make choices that will assist your evolution to abundant health. I'm also blogging every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time at Soul Purpose Healing, where I bring you a spiritual chiropractic adjustment to bring you back into alignment with our Creator's love, compassion, and wisdom. Join me every Friday morning at 8 a.m. and Sunday evening at 8 p.m. for a time of unity, enlightenment, and love vibration. Shalom.
What happens when a group of people are kidnapped from their homes, smuggled away in chains, and held captive in a foreign land where they are tortured, raped, and forced to perform hard labor by the lash of a whip and under the constant threat of death? Slavery, the African-American psychic trauma. What happened to the doctors, writers, scientists, builders, educators, and spiritual leaders from Africa's golden age? Who did they really capture and sell into slavery? Are all African Americans suffering from psychic trauma because of a conspiracy to hide their true identities? Do you have psychic trauma? Take the test on page 22 of the book and see. Order it online today at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. And get your personally autographed copy of the book, Slavery, the African American Psychic Trauma.
With a simple blood test and food plan, Susan Essentials will help your business, your family, and you eliminate toxins and create a step-by-step plan to nourish your mind, body, and spirit. Click here to learn more.
Those who abuse people and mislabel people and you know, put violence on their neighbors or whoever, that they have a more severe problem. And I believe that those people are more mental disorder than the traumatized, because they're inflicting pain on the one who's received the pain. They're laboring them and not helping them. So what do you do? Because I don't understand this. It's difficult for me to believe that, you know, people have become that way today, and when violence is like it is between neighbors and tribes and nations and races, that's putting more burden and more pressure on those who are traumatized.
Absolutely, ma'am. Unfortunately, in today's society, you have some people that walk this earth that are extremely heartless and don't want their comprehension of somebody else's pain is not taken seriously. And what they do is, like you said, you know, they attack more so than sue. You know, they attack with their words and their actions, and they make that person, you know, give them the impression that, you know, oh, you something's wrong with you, you're not good enough, or you are, you know, you are in a place where, you know, you deserve this, or whatever the case may be. But at the same token, the person that is being attacked has to understand that they're not a victim. They're not a victim of circumstance or situation. And that takes a person that is strong, because I hope that the person that you're talking about that was attacked with someone else's words. And like you said, yes, those people are, you know, they got hang-ups. They got all kinds of, you know, unsettling type of habits that whatever they might have experienced at some point in their life, which is not peaceful. They could, because a person can only give out what they have inside their heart. So if they're not giving out love, they have no love. If they're not giving out peace, they have no peace. If they're giving out ridicule or slander or any type of discomfort to another human being, it is within them. It's not what is in the other person. It is within them. And, you know, we know people that walk this earth that have the spirit of hate inside of them, the spirit of discord, the spirit of rejection, the spirit of abandonment, separation, division, all of these things. I said spirit. Yes, I did. I'm talking about energies. I'm talking about energies that are alive, present, and well in those people, and they are compromising with it. They don't, again, they're not thinking, and I'm not giving them excuse or explanation. I'm just telling you what it is. You see what I'm saying? So that person that was attacked, which is your loved one, may have not known how to rebuttal. She may not know how to deal with those words or those actions that somebody else has said to her, because then it makes her feel like a victim. It makes her feel like she's enslaved to what they are putting out, but she's not. It's all a mind thing.
Yeah.
It's a mind thing, because words, you know, that old saying that says sticks and stones, you know, break our bones, but words will never hurt us. That was a lie. You know what I'm saying? It was a lie. Words hurt more than anything in the world. It
exactly.
Can be, because it hurts us from the inside out. If you hit someone and you cause a bruise or a cut can heal and leave a scar. But one thing is about words, it lingers in our being, because words have what they call power. There's power in words. Words formed our universe. God spoke things in existence. So when people speak things on other people and they allow those things to permeate their being, because they may not know how to deal with it, then they become those words. They become those actions. They become that hurt. They become that pain. You see what I'm saying? And those things
yeah.
then start causing other things to happen, like mental illness or either medical conditions, because one then starts believing what one hears.
I have a question, I guess two questions. One, regarding the case you were mentioning earlier where, you know, a person's virtual reality causes them to choose to end their life, is it something that they, is it a feeling or experience they are fearing they're going to have, the reason why they, I don't want to face this, I don't want to experience this, whatever painful thing it was, whether it's rejection, you know, feeling that there's going to be some emotional pain that's just too overwhelming, such as a rejection or abandonment or humiliation, because people tend to take their lives as a preemptive measure against something that they feel is too overwhelming to experience, such as extreme humiliation or extreme rejection or extreme heartbreak, you know, some feeling that they must have experienced somewhere at some time that was just so overwhelming, they feel like they can't face the possibility of it again, so they go through what they think is going to be no feeling, which they believe taking my life will then end everything. That's what they believe, so that's the virtual reality that they're living is, if I destroy my body, my soul will be gone, I will not experience these horrible things that I'm afraid is going to happen. So is that the thing, which means, you know, they will have had to have a memory that they're avoiding re-experiencing. And the second thing, like Rashida was talking about with, you know, people who are not showing compassion, is there a word for that where people do not have healthy human compassion and empathy where they can feel for another person and care? Is there a word for that? It seems like there is. I know there's various words for mental illness.
Heartless.
You're heartless. Because, of course, it's not well. It's not, you're not emotionally well when, like, you can torture somebody, whether it's physical torture or mental torture, you know, name-calling, bullying. But one who does that obviously is not emotionally well. They might not be considered mentally ill, but they're emotionally ill. You can't
right.
empathize with another person's pain. You're enjoying causing pain. That is an emotional illness. And we have looked at it as it's something normal, when in fact the healthy way of being is empathy for other life. Emotional illness is when you don't empathize and you actually can hurt someone and not feel the pain that you're causing. So
right.
is there a way to address someone who behaves that way and help them to see that is illness inside of them?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I'll address the first question you said. There's many, many factors of why a person wants to commit suicide, okay? And it could be several of those things that you said, not wanting to face the reality of the conflict. First of all, there's a conflict. That conflict is looked at and approached by the mind, the heart, and the soul. So when the only way of suicide can actively become a active act is when the person consciously, eyes wide open, make a choice to take their own life and go and actually come up with a plan. It has to be premeditated, it has to be planned. There's no such thing as it just happened, like wake up one day and just do it. No, you've been thinking about it for a period of time based upon whatever conflicts that you no longer want to deal with, that have been in your mind that you feel you have no more answers to. So then you do it. And sometimes you may, depending on the level of the plan that you have, you know, some people may use a gun, some people may jump off like a 29-story building knowing when you land you are not going to survive.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
You expect you're not going to survive. You might end up surviving just having all kind of bones broken.
Yeah, it's a possibility. I mean, if God is not ready for you to leave this earth, oh, trust and believe you're going to be there, right?
Yeah, you
but, you know, at the same token, you still take that chance.
Hmm.
You know, they say sometimes suicide are some of the people who are the most courageous people that we know. You know what I'm saying? Because you are tampering with your own soul life force and not even knowing where you're going. You have no idea. You think you're just going to go poof, but it doesn't work
like
that way.
You're not
going
to exist.
You're just, in their world, they don't. We've known the people who try to commit suicide and become a vegetable because they try to commit suicide. I mean, so many different things that can happen afterwards. That, but remember, this is a virtual mindset thing. This is not based on reality.
Right.
And the second answer to that question, like you said, it is not emotional illness. It's called emotionally unavailable.
Mm.
You're unavailable.
You have another question, if you don't mind.
Yes, Rachel.
You know, it's a very different spirit, and I would like to know, how do you transform from violence and immorality to peace and harmony? How can you do that to help those who have been characterized as emotionally, mentally handicapped or traumatized, whatever? Because it's a different spirit for me, the way things actually have been transforming from my experience. So how can a person who's conscious of this type of spirit help to transform it from violence and immorality to peace and harmony? How can that be done? How can we as a people team up and try to address that issue, especially in our deprivated African-American community that's creating a lot of homicides and injuries? How can we do that? How can we get rid of that very different spirit?
You know what I would say, Rashida? Love is the solution to everything, because a person acts the way they act because of a lack of love. And
yes,
so we must give them the love that they're missing. What we do, however, is the opposite. We give them anger, hate, and punishment. And what they're actually missing, the reason why they're causing pain, is because they're in pain. And love heals all wounds. You see it as a spiritual condition. Have you ever, and we've all known somebody who was just a wreck, and then they've had some kind of a spiritual reawakening, and they literally have a new spirit, you know. In Christianity, they call it being born again, which is literally, it's like they have been reborn with all of the negativity removed.
Mm-hmm.
They've met the Creator, which is only the energy of love. And so that transformed them, that healed them, that awakened them. That experience was transformative. I mean, unfortunately, you can't put it in a bottle and give it to the people and say, drink this. You'll be, you know, here's God, you know. But you can be an agent. You can be an agent of that energy. You can be a vessel for that energy. You can be a conduit for that energy. You can be one that projects that energy of unconditional love and non-judgment and acceptance, because you have to be able to see that person for who they are without the damage that manifested in what they currently are expressing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can see that, you can love them and accept where they are and love them anyway until they can heal from the hurt. That means we who see ourselves as spiritual have to be willing to be the vessels for the Spirit of God that heals.
Amen, amen, amen.
And it can happen.
And that takes the, it also, you have to ask yourself, how important that is. How important that is to you. person shows you anger, that you can turn around and show them love. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, you know, for example, somebody could be arguing with you back and forth, maybe calling you everything, and you just look at them and, you know, you listen to them without engaging, without feeling what they felt, or without accepting even what they say. And you sit there and you clearly say to them, hey, I just want to let you know, I love you, and ain't nothing you can do about it.
That's disarming. Totally. It's like,
what? I love you, ain't nothing you can do about it. You can scream and yell, you can call me everything, but a child of God, but I love you, ain't nothing you can do about it, because I am not going to allow fear to separate us.
And you know, Dr. Debbie, I have seen people do that, and they're talking to some angry, you know, near-violent person, and they do just what you said, and that person will start crying.
That's right.
The person who was in
because
a rage, ready to hit,
the wall.
And they start crying. And that's when the healing of the spirit happens. Yeah.
It breaks down the walls. It breaks down the walls. Love overcomes a multitude of sin. And as long as you understand the power of love and you walk in authority with it, nothing can stop you. Nothing can re-erase you. Nothing. It doesn't matter what someone says. It doesn't matter what they do. Because you know for yourself, you have love inside of you.
Yes.
So you allow that cup to run over right there in that moment. And even if they don't receive it, guess what? That's none of your business. You've already said what you had to say. And you just walk away and you go ahead and keep yourself, keep your posture, put your hand up in the air. I love you. Ain't nothing you can do about it. So guess what? If you don't understand love, then I'm so sorry. That is a terrible thing that you can't experience what I feel. Now, if you want to experience what's inside of me, come with me, sit with me, talk with me, and I will help you to understand. But if you want to continue to hold on to your discontentment, hold on to your discord, hold on to all the things that's destroying you, because it's not destroying me. It's not, because I cannot allow it in my being, in my mind, in my heart, or my spirit, because it's toxic.
Mm-hmm.
And if I put that inside of me, and if I allow that to stay with me, to sleep with me, to eat with me, then that's what I am going to become. So that's what happens, ma'am. These people that you're talking about, they come out their mouths with something so unkind, so unsettling to another human being, is because they out of a loud fear, false evidence appearing real, to become their portion, to think for them, to sleep with them, to eat for them, to breathe for them. They're walking, breathing, walking the earth, human fear beings. That's what they are.
Yes.
Now, only way to break that down, again, we as the light that you are, that I am, and for whoever else is hearing the sound of my voice, we are the light. Our light has to shine so ferociously to, guess what, it breaks them down. Because if you feed them with the same thing that they're feeding you with, you have no power.
Right.
You've lost it.
Right.
You have to know who you are and feel comfortable in your skin to say, I love you, ain't nothing you can do about it. I accept you even in your madness. I accept you in your pain. I accept you in your anger. I accept you with your words, your habits. I accept you. You see what I'm saying? And I'm not going to become you. I can't become you. And now for me to rescue you, I can't rescue you if I become you. It's impossible. I can't. And even then, I'm going to throw this life rope over there to you. And it's up to you to hold on to it. But if you choose not to, all I can do is shake the dust and keep moving, because somebody is waiting to know they are loved.
Absolutely.
That's all. You're not going to be able to rescue everyone, Becky. You're not. It's not one of those things. I wish upon a star, okay, that we can change the mindsets of every human being that walks around feeling unloved, and they got to be so angry to the point that they want to take their lives and take another person's life because of their discontentment, virtual, conflicted realities.
But, you know, as Dr. Debbie says, everybody's not going to awaken in this lifetime the real reality. Some people are going to be stuck in their virtual reality, but you can help them move a little closer. So an encounter with you might be another step toward the healing they need, even though they might not be where they need to be at the end of their time here,
yes.
But they'll be a step closer than they would have been had they not met you. So that's all we can do is be the light, help people along their journey toward ultimately the real reality. Then only God is real. Everything else is illusion. Everything else is a virtual reality that we have created in our own minds. And many who are responding and reacting to that virtual reality that says people hate me and I'm unworthy and I have to take what I want because people won't share with me and I'm hated, I'm ugly, and all of these things that are in their own mind, which makes them act out at others, they may not evolve out of that until they leave here, but they may get closer to where they need to be if you just show them love.
Well, I have one more question, and then I'm finished. Now, my experience has made me want to fight or flee instead of helping because all the time I've been doing it with love and from the heart and soul and from a spiritual standpoint. But then me personally, since I've been experiencing trauma at this age and sustaining injury, it makes me want to fight or flee. I don't want to give the love. I don't have the willpower to still give instead of expecting to receive because when there was the trauma, the pain, and the suffering and the expression of it, there was no love given and it hurt. So I had, right now I'm at the level of thought that I fight or flee. Why is that? I mean, how can I do better than that? Because psychologically, the trauma that's in my frontal lobe is making me, you know, not as sensitive and loving and thoughtful as I used to be. I want to fight or leave it.
Because I'm going to give Dr. Debbie a chance to really expound on this answer, because I'm sure a whole bunch of people need to hear it.
Thank you.
Because quick break, right back and address what you've said, because I know there are a whole lot of people that are at that point. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Oh, man. God sent the monthly sun bill today. This sunlight is really expensive, especially during this season. I'll probably have to work overtime to pay it.
Well, you better pay it on time. We don't want the sun to go out and we're sitting up here all day in the dark.
Wouldn't it be terrible if God charged us for sunlight? Well, thank God, the light and heat from the sun is free. So why are we paying such high bills for the energy we use in our homes? Because we don't know how to use solar energy, the free energy from the sun. You can convert your regular home to a solar energy home and save tremendously on your electric bill. Take a look at your electric bill. Wouldn't you like to reduce or possibly even eliminate that cost altogether? Let one of our solar consultants show you how. Call today, 312-849-3456, and schedule a free consultation. That's 312-849-3456.
I'm Beata, your holistic life coach. These days, it's more important than ever to work on your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health. Are you consciously breathing deeply in stressful moments? Do you have a plan or daily routine to maintain balance in your awesome body? Are you struggling to be disciplined in your eating habits? When you partner with me, I'll help you develop a personalized health plan that works for your particular lifestyle. You can find out more about me at yourholisticlifecoach.com, where you can also review my 3-step protocol to guide you to abundant health. That's yourholisticlifecoach.com, and I'm Viato.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naima Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world.
Big difference.
Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, host John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference too. Be inspired. Watch The Media Connection. Mondays at 5 p.m. and Tuesdays at 12 noon on cable TV, Channel 19 in Chicago. And other cities, check your local cable listings.
Debbie Green with our wonderful co-host of The Female Solution, Naima Latif, the executive producer. So that question was, how can you deal with it now? Mm-hmm. She said, I believe you said that you were in fight or flight, like you want to fight or you want to just leave.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Rashida.
Yeah, I said it doesn't feed my will of sin, you know, and it doesn't help my practice when it comes to willpower, you know, and loving from, you know, unconditional love to help. I'm getting in that mind at this age because of my experience recently, that I don't want to give that love no more because every time you give out love, you wind up in a compromising situation where you get injured or you have to run away from injury, you know, or defend yourself. So I don't like that thought and I don't like that behavior that I'm prevailing or experiencing, whatever the term might be. But how do you, you know, get from the point of want to fight or flee? Because to me, if I fight, then I'm contributing to the violence that I'm experiencing. If I flee, then I can't help myself and anyone else because I'm not dealing with the reality of what is happening to me. So that's my thought. And so I don't have the wherewithal to actually solve my own problem because of being traumatized and not thinking clearly, and it enables me to do, you know, what I used to do, and the power, the real power, is like wrestling against a principle of my own spirit. I don't know how to really, because I'm not a professional at this, how to really explain it, but I do know the spirit that I'm coming into is almost become overwhelming, and I pray, but then to me, prayer without assertion to do better is in vain, and that's my personal thought. So I'm at the point of fighting a flea, you know, and then I thought, I said, well, I'm becoming one of those people who are violent, because if I fight, then I'm contributing to violence in my, you know, layman thought. So I don't know. I just asking you because you're so professional in what you do.
Okay, first of all, you got to understand, you're still attached to your trauma, okay? I can clearly see that by the way you address it in your words. And the thing about this is trauma, you got to know what trauma is, okay? Trauma is an event, or a situation, circumstance, repercussion, or whatever the case may be, that has occurred in your life in a period of time. Now, you ask yourself this question, is that thing occurring at this very moment? And the question has a quick answer, and it's going to be no, because it has not occurred at this very moment. This is something that has happened a long time ago, wherever this happened to you, but you are not what happens to you. See, this is the reason why I did this show, because a lot of times people feel that whatever trauma that they may have experienced, they have to still live presently, virtually with that trauma. When you make a decision, ma'am, to release yourself, when you make a decision to release yourself from those experiences, you got to remember that did not happen at this very moment. But if you keep saying, I am traumatized, my trauma, you are constantly attached mentally, spiritually, emotionally to that event, and it will continue to follow you. It will continue to follow you in the rest of your life until you realize something, that you are not that thing that happened back then, but you are not that person now.
Rashida.
You are not that person now. Your mind has to separate, and you have not, I don't know if you're seeing a therapist or you trying to do it by yourself. I don't know that. All I know is that you have to emotionally, spiritually, and mentally detach from the trauma. Otherwise, it's going to stay present and alive within you, and you will continue to attract triggers that will keep these things active inside of you, mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually.
Yeah. Rashida, think of, let's say you were watching on your TV a gruesome scene from a horror movie where, you know, maybe an axe murderer chopped up a bunch of people, and it's horrifying. You're watching it, and then you hit the replay button, and you play that scene again, and you're horrified, and you hit the replay button, you play that scene again, you keep rewinding the recording and playing that same scene over and over and over again. It's distressing to watch. It's horrifying, but you're choosing to keep rewinding the recording and playing it again and re-feeling those same feelings of horror. So that's kind of like what trauma is like. When you can't let it go, you keep replaying it in your mind, heart, and spirit, and keep feeling again those same feelings. Even though that thing is not happening, you keep experiencing it over and over and over again. So if you're in a circumstance where someone is treating you in a way that recalls that feeling of victimization, you've got to change your environment and change the people that you're around, because you can't heal anybody if you're still wounded. Even if you want to be loving and kind to people who are in various states of mental or emotional distress, you can't do it if you're still wounded, because all they're doing is just triggering the same feelings of pain in you. You need to go somewhere where you are at peace and you can heal and you can feel safe, you can feel loved, you can feel accepted, and you can stop replaying that tape of a horrible situation that's distressing. So don't try to help anybody right now. Don't try to heal the wounded. Don't try to help the distressed right now. You've got to heal your trauma, which means you have to put yourself in an environment of peace where you don't have to battle anybody and you don't have to encounter any unloving treatment. That's the best thing for you to heal right now. You can't heal as long as you're among the sick that are making you feel sicker. So if there's a way to change your environment, change where you're living, change the people you're living among, change the people that you're interacting with, and only surround yourself with loving people. Somebody asked me yesterday, how do you stay so cheerful and peaceful? I removed everybody from my life that was causing me distress, you know, and I didn't feel bad about it. Because, you know, if someone likes to say mean things to you or like to say hurtful things or like to insult you, why keep them in your presence? They're not your friend if they're hurting you. They're not your friend if they're enjoying hurting you. You're not obligated to try to befriend somebody who's hurting you. Remove that from your life and choose only to surround yourself with people who are loving and kind and compassionate and make you feel good.
Exactly. And sometimes that takes a point of what they call, self-independence. Sometimes we have to just take a hacienda from people for a moment. I'm not saying isolate. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying far as, you know, just let everybody know, hey, you know, I'm just taking a sabbatical, as some people would call it, you know, away from, you know, talking so much on the phone, if you're able to do this. And if you can't do it every day, choose a day to do it out of your week. You know what I'm saying? So many hours of your day. You have 24 hours in a day, so you would say to yourself, I have 3 hours. You know, I'm not going to talk to anyone. I'm just going to sit here and meditate and deep breathe and just spend some time with my being, you know, to make sure I'm releasing any unsettlingness that's inside of me, you know, not based upon what's on the outside of yourself. Because whatever's coming from the outside, it comes through us because we're porous beings, porous, which means you put lotion on your hand, you look back, it's gone because it's something went directly inside the skin. Even if you don't even have to rub it, you know, it's just that's the way our minds are. Everything filters through this being, everything. So, you know, we have to learn how to detox mentally, detox spiritually, detox, you know, physically, emotionally. And I don't think people realize they can detox this physical body. But you, if you don't learn how to detox your mind and detox your being and your emotions, those things can also have residues of toxicity. And it's easy to do that. Like you said, you feel unsettled. You don't feel as up to your highest level of self. And it may not, you know, in your body is just a replica of it. You may have chest pains or stomach aches or soreness in the body. Okay. If you detox the mind, and, you know, detoxing the mind means to meditate and allow things, whatever's flowing in, allow them to flow out, which is thoughts and situations. And be present with yourself, you know. Be present with yourself. Don't allow your mind to drift all the way in the past or drift in the future, but just be present. Feel your pain, whatever that is, and then you feel it. Which just means be present. I acknowledge you. I'm not going to suppress you. You know, you release it. I give myself permission to let go of it. And you let go. You move forward. That's what letting go means, to move forward. You know, and you do that until you feel the comfort of you not holding nothing inside from whatever conflict that you might have been through.
Now, you
and
know
this
what?
Is a part of therapy.
Yes. One thing I learned, Rashida, and maybe this may help you, think of the happiest childhood memory that you have. Go back in your mind to that moment and feel the emotions that you felt. Feel the feelings that you felt. Feel the joy that you felt. Consciously go back to that moment and re-experience that. Whether it was, you know, a family gathering where people were celebrating your birthday, or whether it was running and playing in the backyard with your friends, or whether it was a moment at school where you won an award, whatever it was, that moment of pure joy where you felt loved, you felt appreciated, you felt that you were in a place of safety where people cared for you, even if you had to go all the way back to an age of, you know, 5, 4, 3, you know, wherever that moment of joy and love that you felt was, go back to that moment, because that's where your reset button needs to be. When you're going through distress, rather than you going back to that trauma moment and that trauma memory, go back to that happy moment. Because that's how you help yourself heal, when you keep going back to the trauma memory and feeling, that's the vibration that you stay at, and that's what you keep attracting. So you're going to attract to you the vibration that you're holding. So that means you have to consciously hold a different vibration, which means you have to create it by going back to that memory where that vibration exists, that love, that peace, that joy, because every thought carries with it a vibration. We attract to us what we're vibrating. So when you're in that state of distress and trauma and fear, then you attract that vibration and you attract that kind of experience, and then you end up reliving that trauma, like you're saying, you're ready for fight or flight.
Well, but actually, the fight and flight feeling only comes when the incident reoccurs from the one who induced the problem. You know, for me. So I try to say something to them to keep them from injuring me. But I'm still in the environment, you know, because I'm seeing outside of me and looking outside in the community and then looking at the news, and all I see is a violence, and then I feel sadness because I'm very dark-skinned, and it's happening by dark-skinned people to dark-skinned people, and so that's what makes me feel like I'm going out when it's the fight and flee comes when I'm attacked. With the reminding of the traumatizing experience. I don't know.
Yeah.
I pray and I try to, I have the will to heal, but when that comes, an emotion, you know, for example, the guy was stabbed, he keep calling me, and he didn't have no boyfriend, girlfriend, relationship, none of that crap. He keep calling me, and I had nowhere to go to get out the environment. Then I said, if I go out there in the community, then his friends carrying guns. I'm like, yeah, all this stupid stuff start coming up. But I can't leave it because right now my situation. But I'm saying the fight and flee comes when attacked or reminded of the traumatizing experience. So I don't want to be sick, so I pray to heal. But then in reality, when it happens, that's what I feel. And I've never been, you know, I verbally stand up and defend myself, but I've never really had to fight physically to defend myself or run away. And then the fear of running, if you run away from the comfort zone that you're already in, you might experience even more violence and trauma because of what is happening in the community. And I think what induced that was because of the killing of my grandson, and then like a domino effect that I get injured, you know, like that.
Absolutely. So, Rashida, I'm going to suggest something to you, and I really need you to follow this. This has helped me tremendously. I stay in a level of peace. I did one thing. I do not watch the news. I do not watch television at all. If I turn it on, I turn on a comedy show. I do not watch the news. Now, how is that possible? I'm in the news business. I got to cover news. But I'm choosing not to allow them to traumatize me every day with the worst information about the worst behavior. I'm choosing not to allow it. And so I stay in a state of peace because I do not need to hear and see them replaying over and over and over again the worst behavior, the most frightening behavior. What good is that doing to me? It's not keeping me safe. It would keep me in a level of distress that you just described. So choose to control what you ingest in your mind, heart, and spirit. Do not look at the news. Now, for people who say, oh, but you got to know what's going on. No, you don't. Because if you hear about somebody being shot, are you a doctor? Are you going to go out there and treat their wounds? No. So are you a police officer? You go out there and arrest somebody? No. So what, and if you were, you were only going to be assigned to the cases that they send you to. So the thing to do for your own mental health, because you've been through the trauma of having a loved one killed, don't need to keep hearing about murders. That's what's re-traumatizing you. Choose not to watch the news. only watch comedy shows that make you laugh, game shows, whatever, you know. I love watching Family Feud with you know, and all those other shows that that bring joy. Make a decision to only put in your mind that which brings joy. Do not watch the news. That's the beginning of healing. And we got to take another call.
We have another caller.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So, thank you. It's very informative and helpful. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And we'll talk to you again. I'm gonna check on you and make sure you're not watching the news, Rashida.
I know you. Thank you. Okay.
All right, we'll talk again. And 407-701, I believe this is our sister, Viata, with a great show on for tomorrow. Viata, share your wisdom with us today.
Grand Rising, thank you, lady. This has been so informative listening to the show this morning. And I want to just add for Rashida, as we renew our minds from this Twilight Zone we've been in, YouTube University, go back to school. We got to relearn a lot of things, and I so agree with you, turn the damn TV off. That TV is a brainwashing machine. So go to YouTube and learn what, so put in the search all the things that you were talking about. I was just imagining. Go to YouTube, put them in the search bar. There's probably 100 videos to teach you about whatever it is you're inquiring about. Go to YouTube. I spend so much time on YouTube, and I'm going to be I have a premium account now on StreamYard, so I'm going to try and put up a video tomorrow on my show. But tomorrow, my solution for all that you're talking about, people need to get out in nature. I think people have been stuck in their houses, and as Kwame Sunhorse always says, we have what's called nature deficit disorder in our children, and there's too many adults that got the same disease, nature deficit disorder. So when you go outside, you're going to get fed, nourished by the elements of sun and moon and stars and sky and all that, that changes the chemistry of the body. So that's my thought as I was listening to you. And then tomorrow, you won't believe, I came across a jewel of a guest, and L.A. actually referred her to me. This woman is the daughter of a doctor who is the first female doctor in the United States, Dr. Dorothy Brown. I don't know if you're familiar with her. She was the first black woman surgeon. And her daughter, Lola Denise Brown, will be my guest tomorrow. She's been going through somewhat hell in the medical system. She had cancer. She had chemo. Now she wants to talk, I think, a lot about the fentanyl the pad that they put on her that caused heart problems. And so my guest tomorrow, Lola Denise Brown, will share her journey in the sick care system, which is just perfect for where we are in this this divorce we're going through from the sick care system. To hear from someone who grew up with the most a famous Dr. Dorothy Brown, who received all kind of awards. She was, in fact, I think, the first female, black female surgeon. She did surgery. She studied as a doctor. So you're going to be fascinated. I couldn't, my jaw dropped as I was listening to what she's been through just in the last 3 or 4 years in the medical system. Like, blew my mind. Anyway, that's my show tomorrow, your health and well-being with Viata. Right here on the Female Solution, 515-605-9225 at 8 a.m. Eastern Time.
You can hear every show in the
Thank you.
At
let me turn this out and give you your last word before we go.
All right. For ones who are listening on definitely Facebook Live, please understand you're not your diagnosis. So if you've ever had any experience with mental illness, I know someone, please be supportive to them. Please be supportive to them and understand, more so empathize but not sympathize with them and not make them feel like a victim, because that's the last thing we want to do is feel victimized by anything. And that will set you free mentally, emotionally, and spiritually to not feel enslaved or victimized to anything. No type of diagnosis whatsoever, not just mental, as well. So be encouraged and take care of yourself. Thank you.
All righty.
to the end of our show today, but you can hear every show in the archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com/thefemalesolution. Leave your comments about today's show. You can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Watch our TV shows, listen to our radio shows, order our books, and be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, Sheshe. India, Zanyaba. Japan, Arigato. Korea, Kamsahamnida. Russia, Spasiba. Germany, Danke. Poland, Dziękuję. France, Merci. Spain, gracias. Italy, grazie. Egypt, shukran. Ghana, merci. Nigeria, eshe. South Africa, ngiyabonga. Senegal, jeret. Kenya, asante. Israel, toda. Pakistan, shukriya. Afghanistan, Tashakur. Saudi Arabia, shukran. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you. And may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessing.